Today's interview is with Asaya McKimmy, and I wanted to get Asaya on probably because I need a sex therapist myself, but also because I was just really interested to, I don't know, like the whole tantra world is kind of shielded with a lot of red velvet, and I just wanted to pull back the red velvet curtains and, you know, really get to see what's beneath there. Is it, I don't know, it feels like sometimes it feels like the world of tantra is like a secret club or something, and most of us don't have a membership to it. So I was really interested, number one, just to hear how she works as a sex therapist and sexologist, how she got into tantra, and also something really interesting happened to her recently where an article that she'd written about couples living separately really exploded online, and she ended up landing on national TV. So I wanted to kind of have a chat to her about that too. So this is a really great conversation about someone who didn't grow up thinking they were going to become a sexologist, but just allowed the journey to unfold in front of her. And I think you're really going to like it. So let's dive in. Meet Asaya McKimmy. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
Never imagined that I would end up doing this. I don't think anyone grows up thinking that they're going to become a sexologist and sex therapist. It was never offered to me, you know, by any careers counselors at school. And it's really something that I fell into, like literally kind of fell into. So I guess this all started for me when I was at a music festival in my early 20s, and I saw that there was a tantra workshop. And I have no idea how I even knew what tantra was, because it certainly wasn't something that was really in my world at the time. But I went along and I was so fascinated. I felt like I'd found my yoga and my spirituality. It was yoga, but it was also sexy, and it was spiritual, but it was about being here and present in the body, not about kind of tuning out somewhere else. And so from there, I was kind of hooked. I was really interested in it. So I went from that workshop to other workshops and started exploring it for a couple of years. It made such an immense difference to me in my personal life that I couldn't help but wanting to know more about it. So I had always felt really uncomfortable and shy around my body. I have a skin disease that leaves big white patches on my skin, and I had just never felt comfortable with myself. I was always really shy around sex. I didn't necessarily have great relationships, probably because of my lack of self-confidence in myself. But tantra started to change all of that, and it started to change it in a relatively short period of time. I loved what I was learning and I wanted to share it. And so I ended up becoming a teacher, thinking it would be something, you know, like a hobby that I would do on weekends. But not long after I started teaching, a psychologist saw me teach and asked if I would work with his male clients experiencing sexual dysfunction. And that opened up a whole new world of possibilities of helping people in this area. It was a pretty eye-opening role, actually. And I think really what that job brought home to me was how much our relationships and our sex lives, particularly when we're having issues and struggles and challenges in them, actually impact our whole lives. You know, they impact our confidence. They impact the way we're willing to socialize with people. They impact how we show up at work as well. And I was starting to see in that very first role that actually by working with people in this area, I would end up changing their whole lives as well. And that kind of struck me as a really amazing way of actually making people happier, of actually kind of changing people's lives, changing the world through helping people have better sex, essentially.
So can you, I just, like, when you said that there was a festival and, you know, and there was a tantra workshop, like, I don't know, because I haven't really ever explored that area other than I think when I was like 20 or something, a friend bought me a book with like a cover that had like almost red velvet looking stuff with like, you know, photos of different positions and stuff. So talk to me about the, like, I guess from the outside, that's kind of what the world looks like. It looks like a lot of red velvet, eyes wide shut kind of stuff. So that sounds totally weird, but you know what I mean?
No, I've heard it all. I like tantra. Oh, isn't that like about group orgies? Yes. Isn't it about like lots of different positions? Or, you know, Sting does tantra and he can have sex for 9 hours.
Is yeah, that yeah. So what is it? Like, what is it? And yeah, take us behind the red velvet curtains.
So that first workshop, look, tantra, you know, like anything, there's a scale with tantra. You can go far with it. That first workshop was really, it was really pretty tame. So, you know, clothes on, and always the way I teach tantra now is with clothes on, because we don't need to be naked to learn tantra. We don't even need a partner to learn tantra, actually. So we were in a group sitting around in a circle, and it was really about getting in touch with our own bodies. So feeling ourselves kind of drop down into our bodies to have a kind of embodied awareness. The focus is really inwards, and I think that's what really struck me, and I think often gets missed in tantra when people think of it as, you know, a sexual practice, that actually primarily it's about connecting to ourselves and having a better relationship with ourselves and, you know, what we might call divine guidance, if you like, or our higher selves. So it's about connecting to ourselves and our bodies. And from there was some connecting with other people as well. It was gentle touching on the arms to just experience what it was like to be touched sensually without an agenda, without someone wanting something from us, without it needing to go anywhere, but just for the sake of pleasure and sensuality itself. So that's as far as that first workshop went. And then there were lots of workshops to follow, you know, that included eye gazing or having a hand on a partner's heart. But it always started with us connecting to ourselves with, you know, often kind of yoga or stretching or movement. And there's a really strong meditation component to tantra as well. So I practiced for many years actually without a partner before I was able to practice with a partner and then explore some of the sexual practices that come later, like having sex for 9 hours. You don't have to. Hey, I'm not that flexible. So thankfully you can actually do tantra without all kinds of different positions.
Phew. So how did that all evolve? So you went to the workshop, and then did you just like fall into a teacher's role, or how did that go?
First, I went to some other workshops. The teachers that taught me at the festival that we're at, you know, had a longer workshop, and then home practices that you could do after that. So it was a couple of years before I ended up falling into the teacher's role. And I remember going along to the tantra teacher training and being really unsure about whether I was going to be a tantra teacher. Like, am I really? I just wanted to learn more about it. It was actually on that teacher training retreat that I met a man who was my first tantric partner and also happened to have been teaching himself. And so I kind of fell into the role of teaching with him, which was a really great place for me to start. And I probably wouldn't have started without him and without that relationship.
Yeah. And so what were you doing before?
I was finishing my environment degree. I thought I was going to, well, I was an environmentalist and I was going to change the world by putting in place all this environmental policy and changing people's relationship with the planet. And it was kind of in the last couple of years of that degree that I found Tantra and actually realized that I didn't want people to just change their behavior. I didn't just want them to, you know, recycle or choose more energy efficient light bulbs. I wanted them to care. I wanted them to care about the planet. I wanted them to care about the other people on it. And it was through Tantra that I realized first we have to care about ourselves. And we have to be connected to ourselves and connected to other people to be able to care about them. And so it was then through Tantra that I realized that's how I could get people to care, by connecting to themselves and then connecting to other people differently. So the way I thought I would end up impacting the world ended up being quite different to the way that I've gone about it. But my original intention of really contributing to a planet that, you know, is more sustainable, that is more caring, that is more loving, is still there and is still really what drives my work in this area.
Yeah, cool. How did you go from Tantra teacher to sexologist?
Yeah, so after the psychologist saw me teach and said, you know, I think you'll be really great, there's this role, I still see the clients as their psychologist, but you teach them the practical things that you know through Tantra, which could have involved touching at that point. It also involves getting them in touch with their bodies and also just interacting with a woman in a way that these men really hadn't before. So some of them were so anxious when I started working with them that they couldn't even look at me in the eye. Some of them had never been touched by a woman apart from their mother. And some of them had actually never been touched by a woman in a loving way, in a way that wasn't abusive. So for me to impact their lives in that way was really incredible. I felt, and still do in my work, just so privileged to be let into that area of people's lives and to be able to make a difference in an area that we're often, you know, so fearful and guarded around, that I, you know, I get to go there with people, and that's an incredible privilege. So from there, I was starting to see that there were other opportunities to work in this area, that there may have been a career in it. I ended up going to the US to study more Tantra again because I loved it and because it was making such an incredible difference for me personally. I had been through a really kind of dark and troubled period right before I went to the States. I guess it's that kind of dark night of the soul experience where I'd been practicing Tantra for a few years and I just assumed that then everything would work for me. I'd found this newfound love of life and confidence in myself. And so I just assumed then that anything I wanted would happen and everything would flow really easily and naturally. And I was working on my first business at the time and was completely surprised and devastated and felt so betrayed when that didn't work out. And I was doing my Tantra stuff on the side, but wanting to start this other business, selling health food, actually.
Really?
And then, yeah. I still have an interest in like holistic health and natural health, but that just was not making the money that I envisaged. And so I felt like a complete failure at that time, but I also had lost really my faith in the world, in the universe, in what I was supposed to be doing. I think although I was starting to see the possibilities for working with Tantra and sexuality, it still wasn't on my radar as this is what I want to do. It didn't seem like a professional career to me at all at that point. And I went through this really dark period where, you know, I felt like I'd kind of lost all hope. It was really probably the first and only time in my life that I can say I was really depressed. And I'd given up my tantra practice in that time for a couple of months until one day I felt called to come back to the mat. And I really credit tantra and my personal spiritual practice that tantra was for me with kind of pulling me out of that hole and helping me see that, okay, there actually is more. I can feel better again, even though things haven't gone exactly the way I want. Life is actually still okay. There's still a presence that I believe in, whatever that might have been. And coming out of that, it's funny the way things happen. All of a sudden had the opportunity to go to the US to study more tantra. And that was it. I was going. I'd also broken up with my partner in that really challenging time as well. So coming out of that, I had this opportunity to go to the US and study more tantra. And that's what I was going away for. I was going to go away for, you know, 6 months, do a few more tantra retreats and just have a nice holiday in South America and then come back to Australia and sort my life out. I went to that first tantra retreat in the States, and I met the man that I call my teacher, my spiritual teacher. And there was something about him that it's still really hard for me to put into words. He was my teacher, and I just wanted to learn more and more from him. I always got the feeling from him that he had this knowledge or this experience about something that I didn't, but I wanted. So instead of going to a couple of tantra retreats and then having a nice holiday in South America, I ended up staying in the US to do more and more and more of his retreats, and then going down to Costa Rica so that I would be allowed back into the US to do more of his retreats again. And I spent 12 months doing that, actually, between the States and between Costa Rica, learning more about tantra. I had realized in that time that there was a deeper calling for me here, that this was something I wanted to follow. And I'd heard about a place in San Francisco called the Institute for the Advanced Studies of Human Sexuality and a course that they ran, which was really like sex and embodiment coaching. It was really practical tools and skills for working with people around sex. So I also ended up spending some time in San Francisco doing that course and realized in that time that this is how I want to help people. I still didn't know how it was going to work, how it was going to look. I wasn't aware of people really doing this back in Australia, but I knew that working with people around sex and relationships was how I'm called to show up and make a difference in the world, because it had made such a difference to me and I had already had experiences of how it makes a difference to others. So I came back to Australia with all of this knowledge and really not knowing how to put this into place. I was really lucky, though, to have a friend who was a qualified therapist and who also specialized in sexuality. And so I was able to have a lot of conversations with her about how to work with people in this area and what my options were. That's when I realized that I wanted to know that I had all the training possible and that I could really support people in opening up things that are vulnerable and delicate and scary so much of the time. So I decided to do a master's in relational psychotherapy because I wanted to know that I would have the skills. So that started another 4-year journey. And although I'd had a lot of experience working with sex, again, I wanted to know that I had the tools and the skills. I think when I'd started teaching tantra and I'd started working with people in this way, you know, I was young. I was kind of in my early to mid-20s. And so I used to get a lot of questions about, you're so young, how are you doing this? Do you have any actual qualifications? And, you know, I wasn't a therapist. I wasn't a psychologist at that point. But what it was my self-doubt to a degree that actually led me to want to know more and to want to learn more, because there's a way that I felt like I never knew enough. I never knew enough. I wanted to know more and more about how I could help people. So there was the master's in relational psychotherapy, then came a postgraduate diploma in sexology, and then came another master's in science of medicine, sexual health counseling. So for this girl from the country who kind of stumbled on a tantra workshop, finishing my environment degree, I have ended up with, you know, with two master's degrees and a postgraduate diploma and a certificate from the Institute for the Advanced Studies of Human Sexuality, all in sex and relationships.
Oh, shit. That is a lot. That is a lot of study that you've done right there.
It's a lot. It is a lot. It is a lot. If you had told me at the start that that's how much was going to be involved, there's no way I would have signed up for it. You know, but in that time, you know, I'd also started working with clients, and I just wanted to know more. How do I help people more and more? What information? And I think one of the things that I love about, I guess, the way Tantra and my sexology and sex therapy and couples therapy come together is that Tantra provides a really good foundation, actually. And a lot of these practical tools and activities that we can use, and then I kind of have the structure and the science of, you know, of the more Western academic kind of studies that I can bring to it as well. So it feels for me like a really powerful combination of things to bring, actually.
Yeah. And so how is having that qualifications, I guess, change the way you do business now? Does it allow you to go deeper with people, or, you know, provide a safer space, or, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, I think both of those, that it does allow me to offer more to people. You know, I'm not just working in the area of sex the way I was with Tantra, but to work on kind of patterns, communication in relationships, you know, sometimes childhood trauma and past issues as well. I think it also helps me reach a much wider variety of clients. And I guess a familiar kind of couple for me is a woman who has done some personal development and isn't woo-woo, but is kind of open and is interested in some kind of spirituality or yoga. And so she might have heard of Tantra, and she kind of likes the idea that there's intimacy involved, you know, that it's not just about sex, but, you know, her partner, for example, might be a little more straight down the line. And so he wants the more practical components of knowing that there are qualifications and that there are tools and that there's structure to it.
Yeah. I wrote down a question before. In those early days when you were working primarily with men, what did you learn about them as a species?
A lot. I learned how important men's sexuality is to them. I learned how vulnerable they are under the bravado and under the masks of strength and masculinity that they wear. I learned how much they want a soft, safe space to come back to. And I think over the years of working with men, I'm still often surprised at, although men often say that it's sex for them, that there's something actually much, much softer to it. They want to be desired. They want to feel wanted and, you know, significant to someone. They want to be loved, and they want to be able to give that love back.
So they're actually probably not that much different to women. But this is the thing, right? Like I do, you know, when living in this right now, I mean, a kind of crazy time where with the whole Me Too thing, where I've had some conversations with men recently where they've, like, this has been really confronting for them too, because, it, you know, say in the 80s, that whole sexual harassment in the workplace, I guess, what we would consider sexual harassment in the workplace today, was just kind of the way business was done back then, you know, and inappropriate for sure and not right, but it was just kind of the status quo. So, and so now I find men struggling with this whole, oh God, I contributed to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this patriarchal culture really affects and disadvantages men and women. You know, women, yeah, it you know, it might seem more obvious to us, but men are also expected to, you know, to fall into these roles, and that they've, what they've seen as normal behavior, it, suddenly they're kind of being, you know, told that it's not and it's not acceptable. And there's, you know, I think men can kind of feel misunderstood sometimes too in expressing emotion or knowing how to express emotion, or they express anger and they're shut down for it or judged for it. So I think men are also trying to find this new way of being in the world that, you know, that is confusing, and they have been confined by gender roles in the same way that we have.
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing that I wrote down was, you know, like I imagine in the sex therapy kind of area, you probably are dealing with some pretty heavy shit from people's childhoods, or, you know, just reading some of that Me Too stuff and knowing my own experience too, you know, for the last 40 years as a woman on this planet. You know, there has to be a big element of trust that you build with your clients. I guess I want to know how you build that. How do you get them, you know, to open up the most vulnerable parts of themselves?
Slowly is really the way. For a lot of people that come and speak to me, I am the first person that they've told about what's been going on, you know, and often kind of regardless of the degree of trauma, for even couples that, you know, that things are kind of okay, this isn't something that they've spoken to people about. They don't want to talk to their friends about it. They're not sure how to talk to each other about it without it leading to an argument. So a lot of the time I am the first person that people have spoken to about it. The how is always an interesting question. I think the feedback that I get always in the first session that I do with people is this felt much more comfortable than I imagined it would.
Well, yeah, because I feel like a lot of the time when you're dealing with something like sex, there's been a lot of avoidance up until that point. And so they've probably felt deep levels of shame and, you know, guilt or all those kind of hideous emotions. And so just sitting down and facing it, it's never as bad as we think, as we've made it up in our head to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that is often like once we start the process, oh, it feels so much easier than we imagined it would. You know, I think what I bring to the therapy session is, you know, is that I've also worked through my own stuff around sex. It's coming from someone who was incredibly shy, ashamed of their body, didn't know how to talk about sex, and going through some of the training where we were pushed to experience a lot in terms of sex and in terms of what we were exploring, is that I was constantly asked really to examine my own attitudes and beliefs and the way I held myself back during sex. I was asked to really be willing to face my own shame, my own guilt, my own insecurities. Should I be feeling this much pleasure? What will people think of me if they know what I'm doing or I've done? And so I think that that had a really profound impact on my attitudes towards sex. I am certainly very open-minded, very accepting, very non-judgmental when it comes to sex now. And I think having seen how much these issues impact people, I'm always very gentle and compassionate. And really, and I always say this to my clients at the start of their first session, that their comfort in the sessions is absolutely my priority. Because if we start to open something up that they're not ready to, or that they don't feel comfortable, or that they're going to end up feeling a whole bunch of shame around after they leave, then I actually haven't done them a service. So it's about taking it step by step so that they feel comfortable every step of the way. We can always come back to something and talk about it more when they feel more comfortable and confident doing it.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the evolution of your business too. Talk me through that.
Well, I think, firstly, I had no idea what I was stepping into when I decided to do this work. I had really, I mean, and this is 10 years ago now that I was really, so how old am I? I'm coming up on 34. It's 13 years since I first started practicing Tantra. It's probably 11 since I started teaching Tantra. And, you know, I was running workshops and groups around Tantra for a few years and really stepping into that really clear therapeutic role where I wasn't teaching Tantra. I wasn't teaching men the practical skills around sexual dysfunction anymore, but I was really, you know, holding the space as a therapist, as a couples therapist and sex therapist. You know, it has changed immensely. So I've kind of went from having absolutely no idea about how it would look and trying, you know, a whole bunch of different things to getting really clear that there was a career in this, and then starting to see examples and ways that I could make that work. I think probably like a lot of therapists, I was completely unprepared for the amount of business knowledge that I would need. You know, I spent a long time studying, as you've just heard, and that was really my focus of, okay, how do I get the tools and the skills to help people? But of course, to be able to help people, I need them to know that I exist. And I think that working out how to do that, you know, is probably the struggle that that a lot of business owners face, and not just therapists, who, you know, we really kind of focus on our craft, if you like, and being good therapists. The business stuff came for me later. And he's still something I'm learning.
Yeah, constant evolution. Do you have like a practice kind of set up, or like how does the business work? Is it mostly online or?
Yeah, that's changed a lot in my time as well. I started seeing people in my rooms, so I had an office and a therapy room set up. And then I had, you know, one or two people that kind of contacted me and wondered if they could do Skype sessions. And I, you know, I knew that Skype coaching was possible. But over the few years now that I have been doing this, I saw that balance change from people wanting more Skype sessions rather than wanting in-person sessions. So up until last year, I had a room in Sydney that I would see clients in. But then I was finding that even my clients who were in Sydney, who lived in Sydney, weren't wanting to deal with the traffic. They didn't want to have to come to an office after work. You know, they just wanted to be able to go home. And so they ended up asking me if they could have Skype sessions. And I realized that, you know, it makes sense for my clients to do Skype sessions. It allows me to offer more flexibility in terms of the times and days that I'm working with people and moving their sessions around. So for the last 12 months almost, I have been solely working with people online.
Do you feel like it gives them like a little bit of safety or something too?
A lot of people say that. Yeah. So they're having to walk into an office.
That has sexology on the title or something.
Exactly. Exactly. They're in a familiar environment. They're often in their living room. Their partner's sitting beside them. They're on the couch or they're, somewhere where no one can interrupt them. Some of my clients will put on a movie for their kids. It's only an hour and a half session, or they'll drop the kids at school, come back, do a session, and then go to work. So I think for a lot of people, it actually is more comfortable and much more convenient to be in their own home and speak to someone. We're all so familiar with technology and Skype these days that it's not a huge stretch for them to be speaking to someone on Skype.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was your recent explosion into, talk to me about what happened there.
I guess it's so interesting to hear you put it that way, because I think maybe this is the thing about a lot of explosions or overnight successes is I have been answering questions for journalists for years. I will, I'll look at Source Bottle all the time. I'll answer questions for journalists. I hired someone or a friend of mine to kind of help me send out a few press releases years ago to a few journalists. And I'm still surprised sometimes that journalists will contact me. Like over the years, every couple of weeks or every couple of months, a journalist will be in touch with me and say, can you answer these questions for me, which I have always made a priority. So I've always tried to answer questions when journalists want to know something. And I've been really, I think, proactive too in writing myself. So wherever I could get published, I would write articles, I would approach blogs, particularly, mother's blogs. That was a big target market for me for a while, and see, can I write some articles for them on sex? When I wasn't living in Sydney, I would approach local magazines and say, can I write an article for intimacy, on intimacy for you? I would submit to the Huffington Post. I've submitted to other websites, not all of which have been accepted, but I've kept going. And I think that's the thing that I've really learned. We just have to stay with it, because we never know when that kind of break will come, if you like. So recently I answered some questions on a topic, that was familiar to me, but I didn't actually think it was incredibly interesting, to be honest. It was about couples who are together but choose to live separately, and so it kind of wasn't such a big deal for me. But I answered the questions, with my experience working with couples like that, and somehow the story really kind of caught on. People were really interested in it, so I did a number of radio interviews about it. One of the TV stations picked it up and had me on. And as that was happening, I was also, still getting regular questions from journalists or from the Huffington Post. And a couple of those stories also kind of caught people's attention and imagination. So it all of a sudden seemed like I was in lots of different places, which was kind of a surprise for me, because I had just been doing what I had always been doing, which was answering questions, looking for opportunities, keep trying to put myself out there and get visible.
Yeah. And so do you feel like you've ever struggled with that side of it, with the visibility?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I've been looking at this lately for a few reasons. A friend of mine kind of gave me a talking to a while ago. She was like, okay, you've done all the study now. Now it's actually time to share this. Like you spirit, the divine, whatever you want to call it, has got you through all of this study. So use it, go out and serve with it. And that was confronting for me. I really had to look at what was going on within myself that had been getting in the way. And as I said to you earlier, like, I think when I first started out doing this, there were a lot of questions around my age and credibility. And so I had kind of just started to work on that and kind of, oh, I don't want to put myself out there too much. People are going to question my age, my credibility. But I've also realized that there's a part of me that, well, one has been afraid for a few different reasons. I, you know, I think we can all be afraid to put ourselves out there. And I've also really come into contact with the kind of the last parts of me that feel afraid about sharing my sexuality and my sexual experiences. If I really let people know about what I've done, if I share my experience, if I come across as too sexy, or, you know, or too confident or too knowledgeable, what are people going to think of me? What kind of judgment am I going to get for this? So in the kind of explosion, if you like, probably coincides with me looking at the parts of me that have been holding myself back as well.
And so what do you feel like those parts have been? What have been the main things?
The holding myself back? Definitely that fear of being seen. It's funny, when I start with new clients still, there's this, it's like I so much want to serve them and create change for them that I think I don't want to fail. I don't want to fail my clients. I don't want to be judged for the work that I'm doing, for my openness around sex, because that has certainly been a part of my experience as well.
Yeah. Well, we don't really live in a society, you know, sex is still a big taboo. And yeah. I think a lot of people just aren't really sure with how to deal with it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. yeah. So that, I mean, that has been a question for me as well. How do I present as someone who's comfortable with their sexuality in a way that's not intimidating, which is a question that I get asked a lot. That's always surprising to me because, you know, to me, I seem like the least intimidating person that you could meet. And, you know, because I'm aware of my own insecurities. I'm aware of where I've come from, but I understand that when people meet me, they see someone who seems really outgoing, although I'm a complete raging introvert. And I'm someone who, you know, has struggled and still do at times with my own insecurities. So it surprises me that I get asked, am I intimidating to people? So there's been this, I guess, this kind of question or this balance for me. How do I present as I am, as someone who has found a comfort and a confidence with my own sexuality? I certainly am not naturally a kind of over-the-top sexual person. So that's something that I've...
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because it's like I've been having these conversations with Lisa lately about like it is a really fine line, because it's like you don't, there needs to be a relatability in order for you to reach, you know, more and more people. So, but then, yeah, it's just really hard. Like how do you step into owning that fully and not, I guess, losing people along the way because they're too intimidated by your awesomeness? Which seems so ridiculous too, right? Because we also are told, well, you know, you rise and they rise and rah, rah, rah. But we also live in this society that isn't like, you know, is notorious for chopping down the tall poppies. So there's this need to protect ourselves. And I guess it's kind of like relates back to us as sexual beings too, right? Like the business journey, the journey with sex, it's all one and the same, really.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. How much do we allow ourselves to be seen? What is that truest expression of ourselves, and how will that be received in the world? Someone was joking with me the other day of, oh, you're a sex therapist. Well, we don't need you. You need to be having sex to see a sex therapist. And actually that is really not true. So a lot of my clients, you know, they're coming to me because they're not having sex. They haven't had sex in months, or sometimes they haven't had sex in years. So there's also, for me, a kind of a sensitivity to that of,
because there's almost more shame around that sometimes than there is around being overtly sexual, you know?
Yeah. It must, you know, feel to people. I can see how it would feel to people, like we can never quite get it right with our sexuality. And I think particularly as women, we're judged if we're too sexual, but then we're also judged if we're not sexual enough. So somewhere in there, we either have to risk that, or, you know, we have to find our way of expressing, or our way of not being too seen to avoid that.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same in business. It's exactly the same, right? Because it's okay while we're not having the huge success, but when we're having the huge success and we're being seen by a lot of people, then we become a very easy target. And
yes.
Yeah, and so that protection is there. Yeah, I guess in both respects.
Yeah, and that makes sense too. I know I felt it, the shame of going to someone that I know is really successful and feeling like I'm not there myself. So I think that they can help me, but I'm actually too ashamed to reach out. So I'm going to go for someone else who maybe isn't the best person for me, but I feel better with.
Yeah. So true. So what's ahead for you?
Oh, well, I feel like I'm in a really exciting place at the moment. This has been my first year that I have been working without studying as well. So coming to the end of this 12 months is really exciting for me. I am writing a book at the moment, which has been in the works for years. But I've spent so much time writing academic papers that actually writing something else, I just didn't have space for it. So I'm writing a book. I still will be seeing my coaching clients, but next year I'll be rolling out some online programs for women and for couples as well, who aren't necessarily ready to take that step of seeing someone face to face, but there is still, you know, so much information and so many activities that can make a difference to them. So that's really where I see myself going in the next couple of years.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch. Biggest fear.
Failure and judgment.
failure was mine. Judgment, you know, but then I had a whole bunch of big failures, so I kind of came to grips with that. I just learned that, you know, it doesn't kill you, so it's okay. But the judgment thing, yeah, the judgment thing is huge. What do you struggle with at the moment? What's your biggest struggle right now?
So I think my biggest struggle right now is, it feels like in some ways still managing all the different parts of the business. So and making that switch. So going from working with clients in a really intimate and sometimes challenging setting to then needing to think about what's the email sequence that I'm going to send, or what's the article that I'm going to write for this publication, or what this you know, I guess this media thing that I'm really interested in pursuing, how do I manage that and give that energy as well as everything else?
Yeah. Gotcha.
All the different parts that we end up wearing.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. evil bitch. So, you know, we, most of us have, or pretty much all of us, some of us don't think we do, but probably do, have like an evil bitch in our heads that kind of says relative untruths. What are you, what is yours most on repeat?
You're not good enough. You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. Is just what has been my story, been my, yeah, my story and my belief for a long time. And it still comes up. Oh, it's you again.
Hi, fuck off. and failure. So, you know, you mentioned that you, one of your biggest fears is failure. What does failure look like to you?
I think failure for me is actually not being able to do what I love, not being able to share in the way that I want, is maybe being good at the work with clients, incredible at making change with people, but not being able to manage the business component of it as well. And so not being able to share then in the way that I want.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, what is success?
I think success for me is doing what I love, what I feel called to do, what I know makes a difference in the world. So I'm really showing up to serve.
And then freedom.
I think freedom for me is really closely related to that. So it's being able to do what I feel called to do, being able to share my message, to reach people and see things change for them.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Okay, so best place to start is my website, www.isiah-mckimmie.com. There's a lot of free resources on the site. Like I'm really, I'm really passionate about giving people free information so that we feel empowered in our sex lives and we can create more harmonious, loving relationships together. Once you get to the site, you'll also see, you know, that I offer coaching and you'll see how to sign up for coaching. And you'll also find out more about the online programs that I'll have rolling out in 2018.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
I think it's really easy for us to think that everyone else has the perfect sex life, relationship, business. And in my experience, that just isn't true. We all have these struggles. We all have questions. We all wonder if we're getting it right. And for me, I always think of our relationships and sex lives in a way as like our business. So in our business, if we need more support, if we need more information or we need more knowledge, need more education, we reach out and we get it. We know that we need to make that investment for our businesses to really thrive and succeed. And I see our relationships and sex lives in the same way. We're not taught how to have these amazing sex lives and relationships. It's a massive chunk that's kind of missing from our education. But if our relationships and sex lives aren't working, it's not because there's something wrong with us. It's because we don't have the right knowledge and tools and skills and support yet.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank
you.
It's
been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between ep thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up, Speak Up. search Shop Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlinimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.